Good afternoon. I'd like to bring this meeting of House Finance together. It is 1:32, and it's Monday, January 30th. Present today are Representative Ortiz, Representative Kawasaki, Representative Wilson, Co-Chair Foster, Representative Hilton, Representative Guttenberg, Representative Thompson. Representative Gren will be joining us after a bill hearing, and myself, Co-Chair Seaton. And before we start, I'll remind everybody about their cell phones. Might want to check them one more time. By the way, there are some healthy snacks back on the counter for a cell phone from the last meeting or so. So, we'll remind the presenters, so as there are questions and answers, always go through the chair. And we will be looking at budget overviews today from the Department of Law, the Department of Fish and Game, Department of Corrections. Law is up first, and we'll have to terminate about 2:10. So anyway, face your questions and answers. And I think we will let the Attorney General go through her slides and then come back for questions. There's our number of slides just to make sure we have time. Then we will take a brief at ease and go to ADF and G, which will have to end about 2:50. So welcome, the Attorney General, Dan Lindema. Would you go ahead and introduce yourself for the record and proceed?
Thank you, Chair Seaton, Co-Chair Foster, the committee. Good afternoon. I am the Attorney General, Jonna Lindenuth. I started August 8th after Attorney General Craig Richards resigned. I was previously in private practice and managed Dorsey Whitney's Anchorage office the last 8 years before taking this position. Present from the Department of Law, we have Deputy Jim Cantor, Administrative Services Director Brandon Cullum, Legislative Liaison Corey Mills, and on the telephone we have Civil Division Director Steve DeVries, Criminal Division Director John Skidmore. And we thank you for inviting us to present. Now, the mission of the Department of Law is straightforward. Our department is responsible for providing all the legal services to the state. The department has two operating divisions, the criminal division and the civil division, and we also have an administrative support division, so we have three divisions.
And before you proceed further, I just want to recognize that Vice Chair Guerra has not joined us.
Thank you. The civil division provides legal services to the state. To help non-lawyers understand, our services in this area fall into two buckets. There's litigation, defending and pursuing claims for the state, and also transactional and agency advice. The scope of our representation and our work is broad. The only slices of state government shown on this chart that we do not represent are the university and the railroad. We represent all other state agencies and entities. And now, while the Department of Law is shown on this chart as 2% of state government, the civil division represents about half of this, or 1%. And with that 1%, we support the diverse legal needs of the vast bulk of the state government. Now, to outsource what the civil division does would conservatively cost the state twice as much as what it currently spends. And in broad strokes, the civil division is funded half by general funds, GF, and half by interagency transfers, IA. The civil division's capacity has been cut to the bone. It has lost 32% of its GF funding budget since FY14. And it's also down 37% since FY13. Now, unlike most other states with counties and elected DAs, criminal prosecutions in Alaska are the primary responsibility of the state. The criminal division operates with 7 budget components that together represent 4 judicial districts, with 12 district attorney offices and our Office of Special Prosecution and Appeals and our central office. All are GF funded. The 12 DA's offices in OSPA prosecute in 41 court locations across the state. Caseloads are higher now than in prior years. Crime is on the rise, and the capacity of our prosecutors is as thin as can be sustained. Now, the department's GF, that's UGF and DGF, have decreased by nearly 23% or $14 million since FY14, and 28% or over $20 million since FY12. Given what is funded by general funds, these cuts have reduced our capacity in three main core areas. The first, criminal prosecutions; second, child protection; and the third, state sovereignty cases, collecting taxes and defending against federal overreach. As I mentioned before, the criminal division is primarily GF funded. Reduced budgets mean fewer prosecutors and less cases being prosecuted. Our declination rate went up 6% last year. And since 2013, the number of misdemeanors we can prosecute has gone down 33%, or around 3,500 cases. Felonies have only decreased 3% since this is where we have focused our resources. Now, in child protection, while our budget has gone down significantly, demand for these services has increased 55% over the last 2 years. With higher child protection caseloads for our attorneys, that means that each case takes longer in length, and that means that those kids are spending longer time in foster care, and it costs the state more money, and that's $35 per day per kid. Now, another big component, as I mentioned, of what we do with our GF money is ensuring collection of money owed to the state, such as oil production taxes. Our natural resources assistant attorney generals bring in millions of dollars every year. In FY16, they brought in $72 million alone in taxes and royalties owed to the state. The division also protects against improper demands for refunds. We recently won a case before the Alaska Supreme Court defending the state's definition of the ELF, the economic limit factor, which was part of the oil tax scheme years ago. And that saved the state over $500 million. Now, with the loss of attorneys in our civil division, we have lost many of our seasoned tax assistant attorney generals, and replacing those people has been very hard. Now, you'll notice that this next slide is the same slide as the one previously, but with a bar added at $50 million. This slide shows FY08 funding in FY18 dollars after a $10 million adjustment for inflation. In other words, FY08 budget in today's dollars would be worth $50 million, or is approximately the same as where we are now with the FY18 budget, just reflecting inflation. And that also does not reflect that in the last 10 years, the population of the state has grown 9%. This next slide reflects that the use of both GF and IA funding, so this is all funds. The Department of Law provides legal services to the state, and there are two ways that we do so. One is through in-house attorneys and staff, and that's reflected in the light blue areas for personal services. And we also use outside counsel, and those are the purple areas that are called services. So personal services is in-house, and purple services is outside counsel spend. Now, for the light blue personal services or in-house counsel, we are down 6.9% or $4.8 million since FY14. The dollars shown here directly translate to positions. We are down 76 or 13% of our positions since FY14. This is an increase of $16,375,000 since FY08, but $16 million of that, almost the entire amount, is contractual and statutory salary increases, which again reflects that we're back down to the 08 budget. Now, for positions, we are down 43 or 8% of our positions since FY08. So although we're back to funding levels that are equivalent to the 08 levels, we have actually significantly fewer positions than we did in 08. Now, for services, the purple bar, the AG is statutorily required to manage outside counsel, and that expense is shown here in the purple. This is an area where we have achieved significant savings. We are down $15.5 million, or 48% since FY12, the high point for outside counsel in recent years. In FY18, outside counsel spend is estimated to be just over 20% of our budget, and that's a 1.3 reduction from 08 and a 12.6 reduction from FY12. This indicates the value that we've brought by bringing this work in-house and doing this work that was previously done by outside lawyers inside the Department of Law. Outside counsel ranges hourly rate from $250 to $500 an hour in Anchorage or in Alaska, and we pay higher for specialty counsel, especially when those counsel are from outside of Alaska. Now, the Department of Law charges almost $161 for its attorneys and just over $100 for its paralegals, so it's significantly less that we can provide those same services. Now, I do want to spend a little time on this slide on travel. The Constitution requires the accused to have a right to face their accusers, and as much of our travel expense is dedicated to victim and witness travel. With responsibility for statewide prosecution, we have to be very careful about cutting travel any further. Now, law does not pay for employees to attend conferences. They only attend the required work groups and committee meetings and hearings. Now, travel is down almost 21%, or $311,000 from FY14, and it's down $77,000, or 6%, from the high in FY08. It's currently 1.4% of our budget, and we're using technology to bridge those gaps and try to handle hearings and the things without the need for travel.
Thank you. I'll have some more questions later, but right now you brought up travel. You know, when we meet with our lawyer friends in the legal field, they're always going to conferences, and we actually was available to them in our ethics briefings that they have continuing educational credits. Is any part of the department's role in supporting their efforts to be part of that? I mean, I think it's a smart thing because they continually get upgraded, and maybe you have mm-hmm. things that are done that make them more relevant to what they're doing today. But I'm just wondering if that was part of that travel budget.
The National Association of Attorney Generals and other types of similar organizations often have scholarships for attorneys to attend trainings, and we try to take full advantage of those so that we actually do send our attorneys out for outside training, but we try to do so when it's being sponsored by others outside the state.
Okay. Thank you.
Or through the chair. So, now, that last slide was both GF and IA. This slide focuses on GF and breaks apart civil, criminal, and administrative services. Overall, again, the department has cut 76 positions since FY14. Focusing on the criminal division, as noted in the lower right-hand box, much of the increase following the low in FY08 reflects the loss of federal funding that had to be replaced by GF dollars. So that shot up following the 08-09 time period. The criminal division GF has been decreased by 11%, or $33.3 million since FY14. We've lost 31 positions, or 13% of our positions, in that time period. In FY16 alone, 12 positions were cut, and 9 of those were layoffs. We have been forced to prioritize crimes. And as I mentioned before, last year, and this was before the introduction of SB 91, the number of declined cases rose 6% because of budget cuts. My opinion on this is that we've cut too far, but given our budget issues, I'm not here asking for more money. We're asking to hold even on our criminal division. Now, as noted in the upper left-hand box,
Mr. Chairman, my question was, are we waiting until the end to take questions? Okay, thank you.
Now, as noted in the upper left-hand box for civil, the FY08-09 increase reflects a $6 million UGF one-time funding for oil, gas, and mining. And as shown in the purple at the bottom of the chart, between 08 and 13, there was separate funding for the BP corrosion case. BP's deferred pipeline maintenance led to spills that required a shutdown of the North Slope production. The legislature spent $23 million on lawyers and expert witnesses in a hard-fought legal battle that ended with a payment to the state treasury of approximately $250 million. Now, the Civil Division GF has decreased 32%, or $14 million, since FY14, and 37%, or $20 million, since FY13. We've lost 40 positions, and of these, 21 were attorney positions since FY14. Now, I've already talked about child protection and state sovereignty cases. Another area that has been cut is consumer protection. Law's Consumer Protection Unit has gone from 4 attorneys and an investigator to only 2 attorneys. This has led to a 43% reduction in efforts on consumer protection, including our participation in large multi-state enforcement activities and review, investigation, and consumer complaints. Law's ability to pursue enforcement actions for DEC, Environmental Conservation Department, has cost recoveries for oil spills and contaminated sites has also gone down due to fewer positions and budget cuts. This results in negative impacts to property owners and property values in the area of spill and contamination. In FY16, law stopped providing services to parents needing to modify child support orders if the modification didn't yield the state money. And in FY17, law will stop the collection of money for victims of crime, and we're working with the court system to set up a similar program so that victims will not be neglected. But in FY18, for this budget that's coming up, we're proposing another program cut. We're outsourcing collections and closing that section of our division, of our civil division, eliminating 9 positions and saving just under $800,000. Now, the other cuts that we're proposing for FY18 are in administrative services, and there's $231,000 that we're proposing in that area. The bulk of that reflects the move of the Administrative Services Division to the Diamond Courthouse, and we moved from the Assembly Building back to consolidate with the rest of our folks at the courthouse. And that's going to save almost $112,000 a year. We also, with savings from the cut in of our collections department and then moving some more positions in administrative services to shared services, we're expecting the another $96,000 for the collection support and $23,000 for the movement of 3 positions to shared services. This slide again looks at GF and IA funding. Now, we've already covered the point that our FY18 proposed budget is almost back to 08 levels after adjusting for inflation. The Civil Division, all funds, is down $9.5 million, or 16.3% since FY14. Our Criminal Division, all funds, is down $3.5 million, or 9.8% since FY14. And our Administrative Services Division is down $433,000, or 9.1% since FY14. This slide shows the source of funding. Again, big picture, our criminal division is GF funded. Civil is half GF and half IA funded. The focusing first on the light blue of UGF, we're looking at a proposed budget for FY18 of $48,915,000. Of that, criminal represents $27,109,000, and that's the primary source of funding for criminal prosecutions. Our civil division represents $19,291,000, and again, it covers the civil caseloads of representing the state in the matters I've already covered. The dark blue or purple, it looks like on the overhead, is the small amount designated GF that we have had, and that's just around $2.8 million. The bulk of that $2.3 million is from a regulatory cost charge, a fee collected by the RCA through utility bills. $256,000 is for consumer work in our commercial and fair business section, and $225,000 is for AOGCC work in natural resources. The red component shows the other main source of our funding, which is the IA. This is the fund source we use to bill other state agencies for the legal services that we provide to the rest of the state. When we were putting our budget together, we went around and asked the other departments what they see for the demand for legal services going forward. And they said that they expect the demand for this next year to be the same as what it is for FY17. They see no decrease in the demand for legal services. So although other departments are facing cuts in their departments, they aren't reducing their need for lawyers. And that makes sense to me, given my experience in private practice, is often when you downsize programs, you actually need to spend more on lawyers to make that happen. Now, the green on this chart is the small amount of federal funds that we receive. We receive direct funding from the federal government for our Medicaid fraud unit, and the department also receives some federal funds via IA for child support enforcement and some child protection, the 4E. For your funding. Now, this matrix slides for civil break out each section within our civil division and show the funding sources for each section. Many of these sections align with the other departments in this administration. For example, we have an environmental section whose main client is DEC. And unless you have questions, I think I've provided an overview of what our civil division does, and I don't plan on walking through each section separately. The matrix slides for the criminal division break out our criminal division by judicial district. We can go back to the slide that we started with of the full picture of the state of Alaska with the four circles, and those represent the judicial districts, the four different judicial districts. But all of our prosecutors do the same thing. They prosecute violations of state law no matter where they are located. And this matrix for the Administrative Services Division reflects the budgets for Mr. Cullum's team in Administrative Services, as well as my office, and those for me and those directly assisting me. So I'm available for questions if the committee has questions.
And before we go on, if we could have the notes that you went over with each of the slides, if they're identified by slide, that would be good for members to have those in mind.
Okay, we can provide notes. Thank you.
Secretary, I'm sure you appreciate having this already transferred. Representative Ortiz first.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jana, you did a good job of outlining, all the different areas of your department that's been reduced. You talked briefly about some of the impacts of those reductions. Could you summarize where you see the biggest areas where now, because of reduced funding, your department or the Department of Law is falling short of fulfilling its mission? Just kind of the critical areas where you see us perhaps falling short of you doing your job.
Through the chair. If this were a perfect world and I were coming together with a budget that would be the best budget for the Department of Law, I'm sure that we'd be here asking for more money, especially for our criminal prosecutions and our child protection areas. I think those are the two key areas that I think we actually need to have more money put into. I'd like to see more money in consumer protection. I'd like to see another person for our environmental section. All of our sections have reduced capacity. I think, what we're here asking to stay level, I do think we can provide the core services to the state with the funding that we have, given our budget constraints and the fact that this isn't a perfect world and we can't be here asking for more money. But those are the key areas where if I had a magic wand and could add resources, I would.
Follow up, Representative Ortiz.
And to follow up, so if you're talking about criminal prosecution, child protective services, those kinds of things, I assume that there's not only a financial, and there's probably a financial opportunity cost. In other words, we're trying to save money here, but in the end, we might actually be costing ourselves more money with reductions like this. So there's that. Is there that element to these types of cuts? And then the second of all, can you maybe elaborate a little bit more on the social costs that might be piling up because of these reductions?
Well, I think, through the chair, the social cost is most felt in child protection and in the criminal prosecutions. And so I think those are the main areas that are hit there. We are leaving money on the table by having fewer resources in natural resources in our tax collection areas and also the environmental section, because those go after spill response monies. And so there's actual recoveries from third parties that we, if we spent more money up front, we could get more money for the state overall.
Okay, thank you.
And just following up on that, is your estimate that in either environmental or the tax attorneys would actually more than pay for the investment that the state would be making in the inside council?
Chair Seaton, I do believe that that's true, that if we invested more money and had more resources focused on those areas where we're pursuing states' rights and collecting dollars for the state, that it would more than pay for itself.
Okay, thank you. And I think the subcommittee will be looking at that for some proposals as well.
Okay.
We have a balance of issues. Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I hope I'm about to bring something to your attention that will help you with your budget issues. In 2003, the legislature passed a resolution with overwhelming support concerning the nature of the state participating with the federal government enforcing what we consider unconstitutional provisions of the Patriot Act. And since Friday, that becomes very germane again. And I know that Department of Law supports the Division of Corrections, Department of Corrections, and Department of Public Safety. And even though HR 22 is not binding, it was overwhelmingly passed by two members of the legislature that are still here, myself and Senator Coghill. And I would like to know from you, and you might not have run these numbers yet, but how much of your department, whether it's criminal or support services, are used to support the efforts to comply with federal statutes that that now might be constitutionally questioned or that federal judges have put stays on, and how that affects your functioning with collecting and passing along immigration laws. I know your upper levels of your department have had these conversations over the weekend and probably too early to get a response from you, but I think it's very germane right now on what the state's doing, how we're supporting what we consider the law or not the law, or what, or also part of that is also relevant is if we don't do it, what are the consequences? But we also need to make a policy call. So if you could get back with me on those questions, and I know they're relevant today and people want to hear about them. So I'll just leave that on the table the way it is, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Guttenberg. Representative Guerra.
Thank you. So when I worked at the Attorney General's office, I called the Attorney General either Doug or Charlie. Are you Madam Attorney General?
Through the chair, I have everyone call me Jana.
Thank you, Jana. Three areas really quickly. The oil and gas attorneys. So is it fair to summarize it that if we don't have the talent and the staff at the oil and gas section, we have a tax dispute with a taxpayer, an oil company taxpayer. They have a team of attorneys. We're not able to match them as well as we can, and we end up settling the case or getting less money in the oil tax or gas tax dispute than we could have otherwise. Is that a fair summary?
Through the chair, I mean, I do think our tax attorneys, and we do have a couple of them, are providing good services for the state. And when we need, if it's an especially important case, we do try to draw on outside counsel to help supplement our cases. I don't think we're so overpowered and overmanned on each particular case. We aren't able to prosecute or be involved in as many cases at one time because of the few resources that we have. And I also think that by not having as many people in our oil and gas area, we are not building a wealth of knowledge to go into the future. And so it's we've lost a lot of our seasoned people, and we need to rebuild that section. And that would be a priority of mine if I had extra funding as well.
Criminal area. John Skidmore testified last year that annually we've been reducing the percentage of cases we can prosecute. And so obviously the criminal division was focusing on the more serious cases, but not able to focus on crimes that are lower level. And is that continuing, that we're prosecuting a lower percentage of cases that we would otherwise prosecute?
Through the chair, that is absolutely true, and we just had pulled those numbers together over the weekend. That the reduction is mostly in our misdemeanor cases, and so it was, I think the number was 33% reduction in misdemeanor cases and only a 3% reduction in felony cases, and so we really are.
Could you state a little more clearly which cases? I just couldn't hear you.
Oh, so, excuse me, through the chair, we've had a 33% reduction in misdemeanors and only a 3% reduction in felonies. And so that really reflects that we are spending our resources on the most serious crimes but having to forgo our efforts on some misdemeanors that really should be prosecuted, but we just don't have the resources to do it.
Reverend Guerra. Thank you. And then in the other area that you mentioned as most important, the children's section. So you represent the state in the OCS cases. The PDs and OPA represent the parent largely, and then the guardian ad litems, and then some of the other agencies represent the children, correct? It's split somewhat like that. Is that correct?
Through the chair, yes.
And then were you to have enough staff, but there wasn't enough staff at those other agencies, would it make much of a difference in speeding these cases along, or is it a bigger systemic problem that isn't going to get fixed until the children's attorneys and the parents' attorneys also have the staffing they need?
Through the chair, again, it is a systemic issue where you have to look at the whole system as a whole. I don't know, sitting here today, who's the greatest slow up on the system. Obviously, I think if we had more resources, we could faster push those cases along. And I don't know if you'd actually have to add more money to the PD's office or the other areas in order to have that happen. I just can't answer that sitting here.
Thank you.
Thank you. And maybe you can have an estimate for the subcommittee on that question. Are there further questions? On slide 7, we're looking at the amount of blue was inside counsel or outside inside counsel, I believe, in-house counsel, and the other is outside counsel in purple. And the cost differential seemed very large between in-house and outside counsel. Are we having to use outside counsel, not for their expertise, but because we just don't have enough in-house counsel? I mean, is there a positional trade-off that we're having instead of an expertise acquisition with the outside counsels?
Sure, Seton. I don't think that that's necessarily true. We've brought a lot of work in-house that we used to do through outside counsel. And the main area that I can think of right now is our RAPA section, the regulatory affairs. So there's a lot of more FERC work, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission work in D.C. that we used to use D.C. counsel for. And they're still involved, but we've significantly cut the amount that we're relying on them, and we're providing that work in-house. Just because of our cost savings, that actually allows, that's a better way to get cost savings than through other means. I don't think we're foregoing or not be able to provide core services in-house and then just relying on outside counsel as a general proposition. I think we're trying to use, because of the expense of outside counsel, we're trying to use them where their expertise actually adds value.
Okay, thank you. That's a good clarification. Representative Wilson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So back to Children's Services. Have you had a sit-down and look at all the times that the court hearings that are currently in place whether or not they are actually doing what maybe a good legislator thought they would, and maybe they haven't exactly done that, and they could be held in different fashions through maybe mediation or something besides a courtroom, because I know I've attended some, and I'm kind of wondering what exactly was supposed to, you know, come out of it. A lot of people are there, but there's not a lot of things happening. But have you actually taken a look at that to see if maybe there's a streamlining process that would make it so it would free up more time, but yet actually, you know, make it worth everybody coming together and knowing what the outcome is supposed to be?
Through the chair, I haven't delved that deep into any particular child protection case to look at how it's functioning. I've met with our section generally and talked with how cases are going, but I haven't done the deep dive that you're mentioning. I have spoken with the public defender and the public advocate on how we can better have our folks work together to streamline these things. And you know, one of the big pushes that I'm interested in for the Department of Law is really being the pillar of civility and professionalism in our community. I think it's really important, especially in our times that we're facing right now. And I've actually talked to the public defender and the public advocate about talking to their folks about the same thing. And if we can bring a certain level of civility and professionalism to those particular types of cases, I think that will help streamline things a bit. But there's always room for improvement, and you know, it's not that I think our folks are doing a poor job. I just think that those are particularly contentious cases that could help with folks sitting down and talking things through at the front end, which is one of the ways I like to approach litigation.
Mr. Chairman,
it's
not. I don't think anybody's doing a poor job. I think it might be a policy call where there may have been legislation that had been put in calling for these more hearings, hoping that there would be an outcome, and maybe this time to look to see whether or not we really got what we thought we did during the legislation. So it's about making sure that we're making good use of the time, not necessarily anybody's doing a bad job.
Hey, thank you, and thank you very much for the presentation, and we'll look forward to the feedback from the subcommittee. And I noticed that the estimate is on almost all of these things that they're critical in nature, you know, required services. So that helps us look at ways, and if there's anything else that the department wants to suggest of ways, if there's any fee collection systems or any foregoing of fees, indirect expenditures that we're making, we would like those pointed out to the subcommittee, as well as if there is just fees that could be collected aren't being charged, or if there's any in statute that happen to be set and we need a statutory change for those fees. Would you please bring those up to the subcommittee if there's any that you and the agency see should be adjusted? So thank you very much, and we'll take a brief at ease while we go to the Department of Fish and Game. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll now have the Department of Fish and Game at the table, and welcome. Would you introduce your anybody else that you've got worked with you for backup, and we'll go ahead and proceed with your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have some excellent backup here. Joining me at the table is Carol Petterborg, who is a Director of Administrative Services. And also in the room with me is the Deputy Commissioner Charlie Swanton and our legislative liaison, Morgan Foss. Appreciate the opportunity to appear before you today. We also appreciate the format that you've laid out. And I'm going to ask Carol to walk through the prepared presentation, and we also look forward to working with you and your subcommittees and any other opportunities to further explore details in our budget. So I'd ask Carol to go through the prepared presentation.
Thank you. Okay. Go ahead and introduce yourself for the record.
Hi, for the record, my name is Carol Petterborg. I'm the Administrative Services Director for the Department of Fish and Game. The Department of Fish and Game, we derive our mission from the Constitution and Alaska statutes. It's Article 8 of the Constitution and Title 16 of Alaska statutes. Closer, okay. The department has three core services, management, stock assessment, and customer service and public involvement. The management is measured by commercial harvest, habitat permits issued, number of angler days, user harvests and successes, and participating in federal issues affecting the state. Stock assessment and research, that would be meeting escapement goals, meeting or exceeding threshold harvest or catch levels, performing wildlife surveys and research, performing subsistence surveys and research. And customer service and public involvement is having hunting and angler skills-oriented programs, opportunities for Alaskans to learn about wildlife and wildlife management, sales of hunting and fishing licenses, participation in boards and advisory committee processes, and providing information to the public. This slide was prepared by Legislative Finance. Since fiscal year 2008, we have had a 2% growth in our general fund. This is general fund only, which is a direct correlation to contractual increases for salaries. And also, just one other thing to note on this slide is our percent of the total state general fund budget, we actually have reduced by 0.1% since FY 2008, from 1.5 to 1.4%. Okay, so this slide is all funds, and it is showing the budget line items. 62% of our budget is personal services costs. The next largest budget area would be our contractual line. And that's roughly half interagency funding, where we pay for our core services, such as our leases and our Department of Administration charges, and also our state equipment fleet that we pay to the Department of Transportation. And then, you know, and roughly $10 million of that is what we just pay each other within the Department of Fish and Game. And the other half of it would be non-interagency contractual costs. So this would be what we're paying an outside the state, and that would encompass, software licensing, utilities, repairs and maintenance on our facilities, aircraft and vessel charters, and items like that.
One clarification. On the half that is interagency, you were saying that's between subdivisions of not different sections of fish and game within fish and game, but fish and game and some other department?
Both. It actually is both. Roughly, the core services to the Department of Administration represents about $10 million, 17 to 18%.
Department of Administration, not within Sport Fish to Com Fish. Okay.
Well, yeah, and we do about the same amount within the department. Whereas, for instance, the Division of Administrative Services, we process the licensings, the hunting and fishing licenses. We do the data entry and the accounting functions. So we receive the funds from the Sport Fish Division and the Wildlife Division, and actually commercial fish for commercial crew license fees. So that's a transfer within the department.
Okay, I think the subcommittee will clarify whether okay. We're showing $10 million here that's transferred and it's received by one and transferred to another, so.
Right, it's contractual in one division and it's personal services typically in the next, the other, so.
Okay,
this next slide is broken. The lines represent results delivery units within the department. We have four. We have the three large divisions, commercial fisheries, sport fish, wildlife conservation, and then we have everything else in statewide support services, which would encompass our small divisions, our administration, and our commissioner's office. And this graph is showing just the general fund. And one thing to note is you can see that the bottom lines are trending down, and the line at the top, which represents commercial fisheries, which houses the bulk of our general fund, it appears that it's going up, but that is due to the we'd had a couple of transfers into that results delivery unit, one being the commercial fisheries limited entry commission component was moved. It was a standalone, it was a standalone component, and that was moved by the legislature in fiscal year 2016. And also, too, we had a component for facilities rent, and we are allocating this out to the results delivery units so that the expenditures and the revenue is reflected where it actually belongs. So that's, and the total of those two changes, especially within commercial fisheries, amounts to almost $5.5 million increase. So it's not an increase, it's a shift. Okay, this next slide represents all funds. So again, it's the same same uptick for commercial fisheries. And wildlife, there's the pink line, and it looks like it went up a little, and that's just due to the facilities rents that were transferred to that results delivery unit.
So did that come from statewide support services? That's where it came from?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, this next slide is our funding. We're funded approximately one-third federal receipts, one-third general fund, and one-third other. And for fish and game, we have the fish and game fund, which falls under the category of other. So a third of that other, the Fish and Game Fund amounts to approximately 50% of that. And the other 50% would be the interagency receipts and the statutory designated program receipts and any capital that's charged, or personal services that's charged to capital appropriations. Now, this next slide is just a to give you a visual of where we are located, where our offices, our regional and our area offices are located across the state, and which divisions or sections are located there.
Real quickly, I could just jump in that these aren't necessarily year-round offices. For example, the Port Moeller office is only open during a certain part of the year during the fishing season, and there are many that are seasonal.
So now we get into the divisional breakdowns of their budgets. We'll start with the commercial fisheries, and they actually have a couple of slides here. The top line would be the total for the division, and then starting with salmon, they started breaking it down into the various programs. These were regionally structured, so we don't budget two programs, we budget by regions. So, but we do have the ability, we have a subsidiary system that assisted us in breaking this down into actual different programs. So on this first slide for commercial fisheries, it's by the fisheries. You've got salmon, herring, groundfish, and shellfish. And on the next slide, we have actual programs that are actually standalone, the genetics, the pathology lab, and then they've got the core services support. And it's broken down by positions and number of Alaskans served, which is very subjective. Commercial fisheries did this by actual permits and licenses that are issued. And the rating of effectiveness, there's a web link there to Office of Management and Budget Performance Measures site, where you can see our measures. For instance, commercial fisheries, you know, you'll find the measure to for the X vessel value of commercial harvests and mariculture production in Alaska would be an example. And same with our sport fish division. We have two slides for that division as well. And wildlife conservation. Our division of subsistence. Wildlife had two slides, and then we have subsistence division, which is our research division. And administrative services, this one actually is, that's my division, and it is broken down by section. So we've got the director's office, finance, human resources, information technology. The only actual functional area or section that we have at Fish and Game would be our licensing section. That's not typical of an administrative services division. And then we have the Division of Habitat. That does our permitting for Title 16 and special areas. And the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission, which is a totally exempt agency that's administratively attached to the Department of Fish and Game. And of course we have our board support section that supports the boards of fisheries and Board of Game and the advisory committees. And last but not least, we have the commissioner's office, where we are down to 7 full-time positions now. And so that's all I have. If you have any questions.
I'm sure we do. And before we go on to clarification, under Habitat Division, where it's permitting and compliance, or the licensing division where it's showing 0% of cost recovered through fees. Are we not charging for any of those permitting or project review and monitoring, or I'm not? Most everything is saying no cost recovery through fees for any of the services that are being provided. Can you let me know?
We don't have set fees and regulation for Habitat. We do, like, for instance, large mine projects where they charge the actuals, or they pay the actual cost of providing the service. So it's not a set fee. And for the general public, we do not charge a fee there. We want them to come and tell us what they're doing. And if there was a fee or a set fee involved in that, it may limit that. So in other words, I don't know if you can answer that better for Habitat, but
just that there is revenue from private sources for when we do work for them, but it's not technically a fee. I don't know if that sponsor shows up in other funds there.
So permitting, when you do a permit, you don't collect any fees for issuing the permits?
Typically, no. But, for example, some of the work that the mining companies are required to do to satisfy the conditions of their operation, they'll reimburse the state for the expenses that we incur there.
Okay, and I think the subcommittee will want to look at some of the activities and see if there's any way that we can recover some of the expenditure for the personnel and trips and all those kind of things, and build that in. It may be statutory changes you need. If so, you'll be at the Fisheries Committee, I believe, is where your the budget is, so we'll want to be looking at those areas where we are not collecting what could possibly be collected if we structure things correctly. Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we had a debate last year on the various commercial fisheries taxes, and nothing happened. But in terms of raising money to pay for a service, and with the caveat that I understand a lot of commercial fishermen wouldn't want some of the stuff happening at the commercial fisheries division to be happening, so it's not all to their benefit in their view. But it seems like the commercial fisheries part of the Department of Fish and Game costs us roughly $50 million in general fund money, and the various commercial fishing taxes raise roughly half of that. Is that correct?
I can't remember the exact numbers, and it's the other thing you have to consider is that Department of Fish and Game is one of the agencies that spends money as a result of the commercial fishing industry. So does the Department of Public Safety. So does the court system. so does other agencies, so do other agencies incur expenses there. And as you're well aware, the taxes that are collected through the fisheries business tax and the resource landing tax are divided. Half of them come to the state treasury and the other half stay with the municipalities. So that's an often used debate point, too. The fishermen are paying, but they aren't going into the treasury and being reflected as part of the what the industry contributes to state's expenses. I don't have the exact numbers on what the tax measures raise overall and how much it comes to the state, but that's an important consideration if you're a fisherman, especially. You're paying, but you're not getting credit for it. So some would suggest that the industry is at least partially subsidized as a result of that.
Through the chair.
And Representative Garofalo.
Yeah, would you mind getting me or anybody else who wants it at least what we raise in the various commercial fishing taxes? And then I take it that does the administration have are they working at all on a proposal at least on the larger processors and trawlers on any change in the tax, or is that off the table this year from the administration?
I'm not sure I would describe it as off the table, but at this point, the administration does not intend to introduce tax legislation on the fishing industry.
And just to follow up, the subcommittee, we've asked them to look at changing the shared amount from 50% to 25%, which would be the effect of basically one-fourth increase. With no increase in actual tax, but the amount that we are indirectly expending through the 50% shared tax, and whether that is all going to support the fishing industry or if that's being used for other things in local areas that are not directly related, and so that could significantly change the amounts of money that are available to fish and game for management.
If I could just add one more thing, Mr. Chairman. The premise is that a overall fiscal plan will be approved, and that as a result of that, if there is a broad-based tax, for example, that would reflect a contribution from those people working in the industry. A motor fuel tax would obviously increase expenses and would be paid for at least partially by people in that industry. So it kind of depends on the big picture.
Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I got a couple quick questions on the numbers sections, and then another question regarding a different slide. In access and defense, under Division of Wildlife Conservation, we just talked with the Department of Law about that. What is the access and defense section in particular? Are they attorneys? Are they attorneys, or what are they?
The first question, no, they're not attorneys. They're professionals in the field of, like, for example, experts on ANILCA. Other people have had a lot of experience dealing with the United States government over the years on the tension that sometimes occurs between the two jurisdictions. We work closely with the Department of Law, and, of course, it's that agency's decision as to whether to pursue legal action, but we provide a lot of the work that goes into making those decisions.
Yep. Okay. Good enough. And then on the thank you through the chair under Division of Commercial Fish, you have a shellfish group, aquaculture permitting and planning. Do any of those folks do PSP, or is that specifically through DEC?
Primarily DEC that does the paralytic shellfish poisoning monitoring. Mm-hmm. So is that what you're
asking? That's what I was just wondering if there's anything that you do. Through the chair.
I'm sorry. Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair.
Okay. And then the last question. Through the chair. You did mention this earlier under slide 9 with all of the different locations that are, and some of them are only open infrequently, and I guess if we could just get a list of the places and whether we pay rent in those areas when they're not open, or whether we have a facility that's permanently open with a permanent person there. And then just one other question, just dealing with through the chair, so that we've had DEC before us, we've had DNR before us, They all do some aspect of water. DNR does water quantity. DEC does water quality. Fish and Game does water habitat. And I don't know exactly when they all sort of separated out and got far further apart. I'm just wondering if there's been any discussions within the administration about co-locating some of those functions.
Commissioner? Mr. Chairman, first of all, on the breakdown of the offices and locations and how long they're open, does that capture the information you're looking for? Number of personnel at each place, or?
Through the chair, that would be fine. Just sort of general information about when those offices are open.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, on the second question, not to my knowledge, but as far as a combination of efforts, I think with the different areas of state government that deal with water quality, water levels, I know that our permitting people get involved with that, and we work with the Department of Natural Resources often. So, but as far as a new effort to coordinate that work, I'm not aware of any at this point.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, in my first 2 years in the legislature, I served on the Fisheries Committee, and as such I'm aware of, and also Fish and Game Subfinance Committee. Is it accurate to say that since 2015, the overall funding level for the Department of Fish and Game is down above 35%, roughly a little bit above 35%?
Mr. Chairman, the response, yes, as far as undesignated general funds, that's correct.
And if I might follow up, can you elaborate whether, or can you illustrate or tell us if there's any, has there been any significant opportunity costs, maybe foregone catch opportunities, things like that to the industry because of the reductions that your department has seen?
Commissioner? Mr. Chairman, that's a question we deal with a lot, and we've had a lot of questions, especially this year, a lot of interest from organized trade groups and the processing industry, a lot of interest in what have these budget cuts meant to the department's ability to manage fish. I've got lists of projects here that I'm sure you've seen already, but a lot of the projects that we've had to eliminate or reduce deal with stock assessments, surveys, aerial surveys, dive surveys, different weir projects. Every one of those contributes to our ability to manage. And as we reduce the amount of information we have from weirs or from these stock assessment programs, we're left with the decision to be conservative in our management. And I suspect that there have been a lot of areas where opportunity is no longer being made available. And they're typically smaller projects, probably some in your district, for example, some of the herring fisheries that are the smaller fisheries. You need to do not only aerial surveys, but dive surveys, and the value of herring goes up and down, and recently it's been kind of on the downside. And so as we prioritize what to cut, that's the first areas, but there are also some significant areas like in Prince William Sound. The one that gets a lot of attention is the Cog Hill Weir. So there's a lot of areas where our ability to have the best information available has been diminished.
Representative, please follow up.
So to summarize or put it more in layman's terms, at least in some cases, what we're seeing is because of the reductions, lack of or lessened opportunity for fishermen for them to be able to earn incomes for their families and stimulate the economy through spending from that income, et cetera, et cetera. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, yes, sir. And that in combination with the requirement to do test fishing, revenue test fishing, that also impacts fish that would have been otherwise available to the harvesters.
Thank you, and if you have any materials that you can present to the subcommittee showing the levels of that might be helpful to the subcommittee, looking at the levels of foregone harvest in different areas and the amount of proportional management fees that would have been required to have those fisheries harvest those fish. So if you can present something of that even qualitatively to the subcommittee, I think that would be appreciated. Representative Guttner. Oh, and I wanted to recognize that Representative Gren joined us some time ago.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to point out, Mr. Commissioner, first of all, sometimes when people talk about the cost of doing business in Alaska for the state, although I could use this analogy for every department, but I think about it as fish and game, the area you cover is just phenomenal, right? The number of you have employees that you have to manage, our broad range of fish and game is amazing with what you do, and I applaud you for that because I don't think people recognize that. But I also want to say there's four of us here from the interior at this table. You know, and a lot of commercial value of fish for a lot of people is on the coast. But fish are very important in the interior. You know, for food stock and for habitat. And all too often I don't hear that addressed or recognized. But I had a, shifting gears, I had a DNR subcommittee meeting this afternoon, I guess it started at noon. And we were dealing with OPUMP, which is the Office of Project Management, and talking about dealing with permitting and processing of wetlands mitigation. And part of that is trading, and I'm trying to join two silos together. Part of that is trading land for conservation easements to satisfy a project someplace else. So in your project view monitoring, you have all of the money totaled here is from other sources. But my question deals with your priority list for habitat protection and restoration. Are you able to convert that program into giving you wildlife easements to protect habitat and restoration? Are you able to wrestle part of that program down that's in the best interest of the things that you manage as compared with just wetlands?
Commissioner?
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I want to make sure I'm responsive to your question here. So if I understand it correctly, you've asked about our Habitat Division's involvement with some of the perhaps work with Corps of Engineers on designation of wetlands?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Sorry about that. When OPUMP, which is the Office of Management, Permitting Management, I forget what the acronym completely stands for, they coordinate agencies and try and mitigate wetlands, federal wetlands legislations that allow a project to grab a piece of land someplace else, put a conservation easement on it, allowing that project to advance without worrying about the wetlands where they're currently at. So is the department able to wrestle the best possible outcome for taking lands for conservation easement that protects basic core things like habitat and restoration for fish?
Mr. Chairman, I'm struggling a little bit with this because my familiarity with that program has to do with the Corps of Engineers, and they typically designate whether it's conservation, development, or preservation wetlands. And then if our Division of Habitat's involved at all, if we have an opportunity to be involved, their primary purpose is to protect fisheries habitat or game habitat, if you will. So the answer is yes, we would, given the opportunity, depending on the circumstances. And that, apologize, that's the best I'm able to do.
Okay, that's
right
fine.
Now.
Thank you.
And maybe Representative Guttenberg, a meeting with the Division of Habitat would be probably appropriate.
Thank you.
Representative Tilton.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Thank you, Commissioner. There, in a 2009 study, it was an economic fisheries study between sport and commercial, and the conclusion was that the average economic contribution and impact per harvest salmon is considerably higher for Cook Inlet sports fisheries than for Cook Inlet commercial fisheries. So given that information, the Division of Commercial Fish receives about 42% more in total dollars than, and about 18% or 18 times more UGF than the sport fishing. And according to pages 10 and 12 of your report, it shows that the sport fishing affects all Alaskans, so I'm wondering why there's so much disparity there.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, and that was kind of an interesting exercise trying to decide who was served. And one way to measure who was served by Division of Sport Fish, for instance, we could have just listed how many licenses were sold. But there are a lot of people that are underage who don't need a license, or a lot of people overage that need them and once only. And so it isn't an exact measurement. Whereas with they've suggested that everybody in the state is eligible and those fish are available to everybody in the state, so that was why they chose all. It wasn't an easy decision, because with Comfish you can list how many crew licenses, how many vessel, how many CFEC permits, and you can get a little more exact as to actually how many people are employed in that industry. So to say that all might be stretching a little bit, because there are obviously some people that don't have any interest in sport fishing. Secondly, there's two major differences in the funding sources. As you are also, I'm sure, very well aware, when you buy a sport fish license, those funds go into the Fish and Game Fund, and they generate three times that amount from the Dingell-Johnson federal funds. So you have general fund. There's no such program for commercial fishermen. They pay their fish taxes, goes into the general fund. They're not dedicated funds. The sport fish and the wildlife funds are from a dedicated fund. So at first observation, it may appear that, yes, a whole lot more general funds go into Comfish, but they don't have the same dedicated fund source that wildlife and sport fish enjoy. And I don't know if I've been responsive.
Yeah, thank you.
Just real quickly on the other thing you mentioned had to do with economic contributions by sport fish and by commercial fishing, and there have been a lot of different studies that have been produced by mostly in commercial fisheries. It's done by the industry, and with many of the studies that are done for sport fish have been funded through the legislature, for example. And that's really important information, but it's mostly used, I would say, at the Board of Fish process when allocative decisions are being made.
And we're kind of beyond our time here. Do you have a short question, Representative?
Very short. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, maybe you can do this on the Finance Subcommittee level, but maybe a report, because several years back we did put money into a study for acid acidification in the Bering and the effects it's having on our returns of our salmon. Also, the predators along the Yukon River, as far as how many smolt are being ate by pike and other fish. Maybe you could get that report under the subcommittees.
Mr. Chairman, yeah, we'll be happy to provide that. We've got some information on the ocean acidification, and the Bering Sea is one of the hot points on the planet, by the way. And as far as the predation of, you're thinking about salmon mostly, I suspect, on the Yukon River, we'll see what we can get you on that.
Thank you. And Commissioner, I guess we've identified several things on indirect expenditures. CFEC was brought up as indirect non-collection of all the fees that we possibly could, and also a report on the PIDs, the permanent identification cards for anyone over 60, get free hunting, fishing, and trapping licenses, and maintain those even though they're no longer resident, so we don't know how many we have. So anyway, it would be good to bring that up in the subcommittee as well and find out if we're losing non-resident fees because people have permanent identification cards and can fish when they're no longer residents, but they have the card still because it's permanent. So anyway, thank you. So we have those things, as well as a look at a foregone harvest and change in the tax structure, the amount of share. And so if you'd talk about those with the subcommittee as well as anything else that will be there, and appreciate your coming in, and we'll take a very quick at ease before we go to the next correction. Thank you. We are back on the record. It is 2:02, and we have an adjournment at 3:30, so we have the Department of Corrections, and welcome, Commissioner. Would you introduce yourself for the record, and we'll begin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Dean Williams. I'm the Commissioner for the Department of Corrections. Thank you for having me, and as we do a high-level overview of our budget, With me is Director Wilkerson. I'm going to have her go through the slides with you. It'll keep things moving along at a nice pace, I hope. And then if you have questions, then hopefully I can chime in at the end, or and we'll just get started. Director?
For the record, my name is April Wilkerson, and I'm the Director of Administrative Services for the Department. Slide 2 references the mission of the Department, which is to enhance the safety of our communities by providing secure confinement, reformative programming, and supervised community reintegration. There's also links to this constitutional authority, our budget, as well as the division measures that are on the websites. On slide 3, it is a 10-year look back comparing the general funds of the agency's budget between 2008 and 2018, our budget request, and an overall growth rate annually of 2.7%. The department's budget did peak in 2013, and that was the first year of the Goose Creek funding as it came online, with full funding coming online in 2014. Slide 4 is a representation by line item, and you can see the continued growth between 2008 and 2018, which is primarily our personal services. On slide 5, it is the general fund overall of the department between 2008 and 2018 by our results delivery unit, and you can see that our population management is our biggest results delivery unit, or RDU. It encompasses all of our institutions, our probation offices, and now in 2018 our pretrial units.
Mr. Chairman, just a clarification on that. On slide 5, it says in FY17 closure of the Palmer Correctional Center, and then it says after that Senate Bill 91. What's the tie-in between Senate Bill 91 and the closure of PCC?
Through the chair, Representative Kawasaki, there's an expectation under Senate Bill 91 that there's going to be in our budget reflected as a contraction of hard beds in our hard facilities statewide. This was an opportunity for us to get ahead of that curve, quite frankly, because it's really tied to two things. One, it's tied to Senate Bill 91's expectations coming forward, I think, to the department. The second thing is that we had capacity, and capacity had existed for quite some time regarding to Palmer Correctional Center, and that's the reason why other commissioners have been looking at that, quite frankly, as a potential closure for a while, because we really had to have capacity to absorb those inmates into other parts of the facility without incurring overcrowding the other facilities elsewhere, and also allowed us, quite frankly, to realign and reposition some of the staff to go to some of the areas where I felt the department was vulnerable, especially the Anchorage Correctional Complex, where we had and still do have a bit, but even more so, forced overtime situations of staff. And so it was a way of reinforcing those areas where we needed reinforcement, and it was an opportunity for us to get ahead of the curve.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
On slide 6, it is a representation of all fund sources within the department by results delivery unit. And again, we do have various fund sources, but population management, with having all of the institutions and the base services, is still the highest RDU. Slide 7 is representation of our budget for 2008 to our FY18 governor's request by fund source. And again, our federal services are the least amount of fund sources within the department, with designated general funds after that, and then other fund sources and general funds. We are primarily general fund driven. On slide 8.
Let me ask a clarification. Am I reading this right, that we are anticipating more federal receipts than we really did in the past?
Through the chair to Representative Seaton, or to the chair, I apologize. We are. We do anticipate a slight increase to our federal authority. It's not grant-driven, it's by mandates. We have an annual cost of care, and we have seen an increase in that daily cost rate for the federal offenders that we do house in our Alaskan facilities.
That's not related to the Affordable Care Act health reimbursement.
To the chair, that's correct, it is not.
Representative Thompson.
Yeah, I just thank you, Mr. Chairman. The line item, other state funds, $34.5 million. I was just curious, where do those other state funds? What comprises that?
Through the chair to Representative Thompson, the department receives PFD criminal funds, and there's about $11 million in our budget this year. In addition to that, there was a fund change to Alaska Capital Income Fund. So there's another $9 million there, and then we have interagency receipt authority between various departments, and then we have a little bit of mental health trust money as well as capital improvement money.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Slide 8 is a representation of the Division of Institutions. On line 2, within the institution facilities, that line is representative of all of the operating institutions as well as the out-of-state facility contract that we have in place. The biggest impact in that line is we did, in the 2018 budget, put forward a decrement within that division of 11.619. It also encompasses the Palmer closure with the reallocation of those positions. We did have 89 positions from the Palmer closure that were reallocated. 30 went to the pretrial unit, and then the other 59 were reallocated into various other institutions based on the staffing need of those facilities. And we also did bring Palmer Farm back, the Point McKenzie Farm, back up and operational. So it is now housing offenders back in that location. The other highlight within this division is on line 7 within the community residential centers, and we did reduce that budget by $8.1 million in efforts to realign and renegotiate contracts. So we are moving forward with that.
And I think a clarification question, Representative Thompson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Item 4, inmate transportation, $2.8 million. Also in the Department of Public Safety, State Troopers has a inmate transportation or to pretrial facility. This is in addition to the State Troopers transporting prisoners?
Through the chair, Representative Thompson, that's correct. There are two departments now that are tasked. It's actually, and correct me if I'm wrong, Director, but DPS is actually tasked with the movement of all prisoners in the state. We are given authority through them to move inmates just because of efficiencies and organizational issues. That's the current structure. Am I saying that right yet?
Follow-up.
So this isn't to transport somebody from one village to Bethel for a trial or anything, is it? Or is this in a...
Through the chair, Representative Thompson, as loosely... The answer is yes to that in most cases. It's really moving between facilities from a village or an arrest issue for to come into a jail or a facility. That would generally be the trooper's responsibility.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And clarification questions?
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just clarification on the number Alaskans served not all Alaskans have used these facilities or these programs, so I just wanted to make that clear.
Well, through the chair, Representative Gutenberg, you're absolutely right. I think, you know, part of the interpreting of these is this, we're housing people that we all want to be where they're at. In most cases, there's some cases, of course, as we try to reform the system, we're trying to get some more of those people out. But I certainly it's not, you're not getting a residence at our, not a Alaska resident is getting residence in our department, that's for sure.
Or transportation.
Or transportation.
So it would be helpful if we would align those so that the subcommittee, when they're looking at, can see how many people were actually transported.
Mr. Chairman, I get where you're going on that, and yes, and I think there was some interpretation of what should go there. So thank you. We'll do that, though.
Go ahead.
Slide 9 is our Division of Health and Rehabilitation. I do want to point out on line 5, we do have an increase in our budget request. It is the second year of fiscal note associated with Senate Bill 91, and that is to increase our institutional substance abuse services by an additional $500,000.
And Mr. Chairman, if I may, I see the same interpretation issue of Alaskans served, and perhaps on these slides we'll circle back on to make sure that we're getting the right interpretation of what you're looking for and what the subcommittee is looking for. So just going forward.
Slide 10 is a representation of the Division of Probation and Parole. We have 13 probation offices statewide, and then we also have electronic monitoring that's allocated within 6 communities that are operated by the department, and we are looking to expand that service. There are no major budget changes within that division in the FY18 budget.
Clarification. So how many positions, are these the correct number of positions? You said 16 at one point. What was that for?
Through the chair, I believe I said 13 regional offices is what I meant. So statewide, there's 13 offices that provide service. And within electronic monitoring, there are 6 communities that have that service provided within those offices. So there's the staff number are correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Slide 11 is the new pretrial service division that was established through Senate Bill 91. It is a new division. The main budget change you'll see in the FY18 budget is year 2, bringing pretrial services to full budget with the expectation to get it up and operational with pilot offices this fall in anticipation of full effect that goes in January of 18.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Wilson.
So on the 59, since you're not going to have to fall, can you give us numbers of actual people who are hired right now? Because, I mean, are we going to have people hired from now all the way until the fall, or is it only half the people? But of that 59, how many do you currently have hired ready to go?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, right now we have one employee, the director of the pretrial unit, and we have recruitments out for a broad range of supervisory staff coming on next. And that's the first sort of bite at the apple. We've been at this a bit even before I got the pretrial director. We've been looking at how to, the biggest decision is how to structure this unit. So getting that right is everything. But officially we have one person who right now who's employed with recruitment out for several others coming on, I think, this week.
Okay, that's 17. So are we budgeting 59 positions for FY18? Do you expect to fill those for FY18?
Mr. Chairman, the plan is that we're going to have 59 positions by the mid-cycle, or I haven't talked to my director about when we're planning on bringing all these folks on, but there's a launch that of those all those positions statewide to deal with the pretrial front-end unit population.
If you have a schedule of those, it would be good to have that for
the subcommittee. Sure.
Mr. Chairman, follow-up? I just thought earlier that that you said that 30 people from Palmer were moved into pretrial. So are those, did I misunderstand something?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, those were PCNs that we took essentially as a result of closing Palmer. So there weren't 30 positions. These were PCNs that we've saved from savings that were tied to the pretrial unit. So we're using those 30 PCNs for that first stand-up of those positions. So it really is a reinvestment. I mean, it really is taking those positions and using it for this purpose, which was the intent in our budget, as I recall.
Thank you. I just thought they were real people.
No.
Thank you, Representative Pruitt. Did you have a clarification?
Yeah, it's on this. Yeah, I'm just trying to make sure I understand fully. So the actually, I'll hit on what you just highlighted there. So we should see a decrement from where there's 34 positions in the closure. We should see a decrement in the personnel services associated with that, whereas in we should see the increase in the pretrial. Is that correct? If I were to dig deeper, that's what I would see?
I think I'm going to say this right, but I'd rather have Director Wilkerson say it right for me.
Through the chair to Representative Pruitt, that's correct. We did take just over a $3.5 million reduction in the Palmer as part of the overall Senate Bill 91 reduction for this year, and then we moved the PCNs into this unit without funding.
Okay, we'll follow up. And thank you for that. I just wanted to make sure that we weren't moving and keeping money over there. So that's important. But I did want to, on the pretrial services, you said at some point in time you will be filling those positions, but you have not filled them yet. Around when? You said later this year. Is that in the fall? And my question is associated with, it's 59, are we funding 59 positions for the full year? And if you're going to fill them in January, I mean, do we need to be funding 59 full positions for a year? Should we expect an increase next year if these 59 positions are only funded? If, let's say, we're only funding three-quarters of the 59 positions because we only have three-quarters of a year, should we expect an increase next year? Help me understand the details of this allocation.
Through the chair to Representative Pruitt, the fiscal note for Senate Bill 91 for the pretrial division, we did not include any one-time startup cost, any training, any of those initial costs. And so what we intended to do is utilize that money to support the recruitment efforts and getting people on board and trained within this unit as ongoing efforts. And this is the full amount for the pretrial unit at this time.
So
follow-up, Representative Pruitt.
To get the answer, so we expect that they'll be hired at what point, on July 1st or through the course of the year?
Through the chair to Representative Pruitt, we hope within the first quarter. That is our goal. But we can get that phased plan to you. We know the reality of trying to get all the 30 positions that are moved in there filled by July 1st is probably not going to happen, but we're making every effort to move forward to make it happen as quickly as possible so we can get everybody in place, trained up, and ensuring that the pretrial, when it does go live fully statewide, is successful.
And Representative Pruitt, that's why I asked for the phase-in to be brought to the subcommittee. But we're getting down in more than clarification questions here. We're getting down into substantive things, so
it's $10 million of clarification, though.
Representative Ortiz, has your question been answered?
I'll try it and go ahead and rule it out of order if you want to. So, then again, I'm kind of always into the net effect of these things. Senate Bill 91, do you see any unfunded mandates coming upon your department in particular?
Yes, we are getting on this slide. Let's go to the next slide. We're almost to the end, and then we'll scroll back to the substantive questions.
So on slide 12 is our Board of Parole, which is within the department underneath the commissioner. We do have one change within the Board of Parole's budget this year, and it's the removal of the one-time startup cost associated with 91. Senate Bill 91 did change the length of time between hearings when someone violates their parole. They have a much shorter time before they come before the hearing. And so we are removing that funding. On slide 18 is the Division of Administrative Services. On line 2, we do have a couple changes within the Administrative Services Division. We are transferring 4 positions over to shared services in efforts to further reduce the cost from our processing. We also have a decrement of $35,700 tied into that shared service. On line 3, we have 2 primary changes, which is the transfer of our data processing manager over to the centralized IT unit, as well as a transfer of 4 PCNs along with funding from the Palmer Correctional Closure in efforts to enhance the information technology unit. We did have a staffing study that was completed in last year, and that staffing study did show that our IT unit within our technology for the department was about 26% unfunded and underutilized. So what we're trying to do is bring them up to where we can identify and find more efficiencies through technology.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, I have a memo from the Department of Law that says you regularly or frequently hold inmates for the INS for deportation, and that, you know, and up there we're on the previous slide, you have rents, what is it called, state facility rent. I'm wondering if, and deportation proceedings can take a long time, and, you know, this legislature, as in the past, has expressed its opinion on some of those things, certainly on constitutional grounds of what we're doing. There are certain things that clearly are off of that, but I'm wondering in the end if you are holding inmates for deportation for the federal government that they are not compensating us for.
Go ahead.
Do you want to?
Go ahead.
Through the chair to Representative Guttenberg, the answer is no. Anyone that's held within our facility on a federal detainer, we bill the feds directly, and they pay us our daily rate. In addition to that, we also receive, it's about $150,000. We participate in what's called the State Criminal Alien Assistance Program. So we do receive about another $150,000, and it fluctuates, that enhances the federal authority within the Institution Director's Office in Anchorage Complex.
One quick follow-up, Mr. Chair. And do those records include country of origin and religion?
Through the record to Representative Guttenberg, I'm going to have to get back to you. I do believe we record the country of origin, but I'm not quite sure of the religion if we record that.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And we are on the Office of the Commissioner.
Within the Office of the Commissioner, the biggest change from 2017 is the establishment of the Professional Conduct Unit, which you'll see on line 4. We established this unit from existing resources from reduced contracts, and we transferred it into the Correctional Academy, as well as utilizing other PCNs within the department. We deleted, I believe, 3 to establish 3 new ones to ensure the success of this unit. And I believe, Commissioner, do you want to?
Yeah, I'll just make one note about this unit and the critical aspect of it. It is, Mr. Chairman, the foundation of work that I think that must be done. This is not an optional work for me, and here's why. We have a serious drug trafficking problem right now in our prison system. It's unsafe for staff. It's unsafe for inmates. We have inmates, an inmate overdose and die about 5 or 6 months ago. It's the real deal. And so this unit is designed to help coordinate intelligence in terms of going after drug trafficking and drug and providing some drug interdiction strategies for what's happening inside the prison system. And at some later date, if you're interested in that and some of the other, we're contemplating where we might be able to present about some of the issues, because I think it's important that we know. The second thing is that this unit is also going to drive change out of my office so that when we have really bad incidents occur, deaths of inmates, serious assaults on staff or other inmates, that we have a professional response in terms of investigating those incidents, and that drives change inside my office, and that you don't get to duck behind not knowing what the bad thing was that happened. And in every other state I have visited, there is some independent arm within either commissioner's office, most of the times in a commissioner's office, but somewhere where there's an inspector general that deals specifically with the difficulty of running prisons and the high-risk environment that our staff have to tackle every single day. And so having this unit is not optional for me. It is absolutely a requirement. And I'll tear down a whole bunch of other things if I have to make it happen. The last thing I'll say is that when there's an allegation, a criminal allegation against a staff member, we want a professional arm that is going to look at those absent and be devoid of any political influence or politics about when things happen. And so we have to create a deterrent. 99% of our staff are great staff. But there's a 1% that when they're doing wrong things, and including assisting in drug trafficking or other misconduct, we have to have an arm that investigates that and makes those cases stick. The other thing is that if we also want this to protect staff from false allegations against inmates too. And so you have to have a professional body that does it. So for me, it's a mandatory change, and I have robbed from other places, and I'm hoping that all of you will recognize that sometimes when you're responsible for an agency like this, you need to do things to make sure that you have a safe environment for your staff and for the inmates that are in there, and that's why that this change is in, that's why we're showing that change, and that's what that work is about.
Well, we appreciate that, because accountability is one of those things that is utmost importance in all of the systems, but especially in corrections. Representative Guerra, and I believe then we'll go back to general questions, which are going to be really quick. And so.
So, Commissioner, I get your passion here, right? But we're at a budget where everybody's scrambling to see, can we protect seniors, or can we protect kids, or can we deal with alcoholism and drug abuse? And so, and if we pay for this, then we're paying less for that. And so let me ask you about the professional conduct unit. What was being done before? I mean, wasn't there a way to investigate misfeasance, malfeasance, bad conduct before these three people were added?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, no, there wasn't. And what was there was very limited. So in my discussions with the Alaska State Troopers about this effort, I mean, we started this conversation a long time ago about capacity. And part of the problems we've had in the corrections system, much to the chagrin of nearly all the staff, is that when bad things have been alleged, it's been sort of happenstance about how they get investigated. And the most important thing about this is that what it does to the rest of the system, when you go and look at other states, and Wyoming, who has about half our prisoner population, they have about 10 or 12 staff. And here's why, is because it makes the system change and be responsive. And so I get the competing interests, but I really hope you understand that the priority of this is either having a safe system for not just inmates, but especially for staff, that it forces bureaucracies to address problems and not let them get away. And why I like Wyoming's model is that, quite frankly, there's a complete feedback loop about this effort. I'll be happy to talk about it later. There's a reason why I'm passionate about it, and it's real, and it's the right thing to do. Of all the decisions I have made, I am absolutely the most certain about this one. And so I'd love to talk more about it later, or even offline for that matter.
Sure, and individual members can get with you as well as bring it up in the subcommittee. Sure. I wanted to recognize Representative Chenalta has joined us earlier and is still in the audience. We are in questions, substantive questions. Are there Representative Wilson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I'm kind of concerned that, you know, we're saving money on the community regional jails, which, you know, are halfway houses, which is a cheaper way than keeping them in jail. We're not putting a large amount of people on electronic monitoring, another one where we could save money and make sure people are safe. And it's also my understanding that we could be putting people in if we want to basically put them back in Washington, Colorado, where we did before, was about $65 a day. So as we're adding three more people to the commissioner's office, putting more people in that was Palmer, why are we cutting down on the things that seem that they cost less and do well, yet keep open our most expensive jails instead?
Commissioner.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, you've raised about three or four real substantive issues, and I will be more than happy, but I'll try to address them quickly here. One, the problem with the halfway houses that we had, and what I inherited was a block way of buying halfway house beds. And so if we had 100 in them or 200 in them, we were paying the same. And so we can say they charged us $46 or $50, $60, but the reality was what I inherited a department that was, and still are, and because I'm renegotiating contracts, I'm still paying for empty beds. And instead of having a tiered pricing system, which I'm not a very in-depth businessman, but I wouldn't think any of us would want to pay for a product where you didn't have some sort of graded scale about what you were paying for. So we were paying for halfway house beds that were sitting empty. I changed that. I cut 100 beds. I saved $3 million in the course of about a month on this issue annually. $3 million annually. And we have further to go, and I'm going to continue to drive that change. The other thing about electronic monitoring, so I have done nothing to change any of the status of electronic monitoring. It is absolutely cheaper than having people in prison. But here's the problem with the rub, and here's why I'm working this problem. Right now, either we charge an inmate for the privilege of being electronic monitored on the front end, or we charge him, the state charges him on the back end. And so if you have money to pay for the $100 a week of the privilege of us being supervising you, you pay that. If you don't, you sit in jail. And I've talked to many inmates who sit in jail because they don't have $100 a week to afford electronic monitoring. So I've made no changes for electronic monitoring because I'm looking at multiple ways about how electronic monitoring can be used and make sure that we're using electronic monitoring in smart and intelligent ways. So I know I'm over my time. I'm more than happy to discuss any of these issues in the subcommittees. Mr. Chairman, they're issues that are really worthy of a debate, and I appreciate the questions on them so we can really kind of mix it up on it in a really, really good way. And so I thank you for your time.
Thank you. And just to make sure that you're aware that in the subcommittee should be looking at avoidance of both mental and physical problems, mm-hmm. and how you're going to lower the health care costs within our institution.
Sure.
I know you have some activities you're starting on, but I'd like to see an expansion and how what cost savings you could predict. And so it is 3:30, and I look forward to the subcommittee report back. And so thanks to the committee, and we have next meeting will be tomorrow at 1:30, Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, University of Lassen, and the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development. And if there are no other questions, we will see everybody tomorrow. Thank you.